Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Donna, it's fall.
Boy, finally.
Finally. Well, welcome to our kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We get together here once a week, and we talk about food things and local food things. Besides talking about fall things like squash today, we're going to talk about a program that has grown, a good thing for a farm-based thing to do. It grew. A program started with Jan Libby and Tim Landgraf. They started One Step at a Time Gardens in North Central Iowa. And then, because things just keep getting better and better.
Right. They started as farmers.
They started as farmers, right. One step at a time. But then Jan's interest just kept growing and growing.
In community food systems.
Today we'll talk to Jan and find out how a great vision, collaboration, cooperation, and good people have grown into a great network for local food in North Central Iowa. You know, it's always good to talk to a farmer. And we know a lot of nice people. We know a lot of good farmers. Today we have someone here from Belmont, from Hancock County.
We have with us in the studio Jan Libby, and we are here talking about a book that she is in. It's called Women and the Land by Barbara Hall and Catherine Gamble, published by Ice Cube Press. And it's a picture book. It's like a coffee table picture book. So pictures of all these women farmers around Iowa. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. You know, you might want to buy copies of this to give to Christmas presents for people who already have everything they could possibly ever want. And it's kind of like, you know, Iowa in the national press is kind of all the rage these days. There's been a lot of media attention, various PBS crews around interviewing because we apparently have a very authentic lifestyle. So here is Jan Libby, a representer of this authentic lifestyle. Welcome, Jan.
Hello, how are you? Great. It's a great slice of Iowa that's gotten captured in the book.
Yeah, it is. It's a really nice, and it's about apparently the two women who are the author and the photographer worked for Meredith Press and knew each other there, and astonishingly enough, they learned that the majority of land in Iowa is actually owned by women. And they went, oh, fancy that. And so they went around and the, I don't know, I didn't even count. I don't know, what is it, 10 or 15 different ages, different generations. How did they find you, Jan?
That's a really good question. I don't remember. You know, it's been a while since I got approached for the book. So I'm not exactly sure how my name crossed their path. I know that Lynn Hughes, who's very active with local foods work in the state.
That's right. She's the food to farm coordinator somewhere.
Right. And she works with the ISU local foods team.
Mm-hmm.
And my role with local food coordinating has kept me, you know, connected to that network. So I think, you know, that may be one of the places where that connection
came.
Here's our
iconic farmer, Jan Libby, and she has a farm with her husband, Tim Landgraf. It's called One Step at a Time, right?
One Step at a Time Gardens.
That's a very pragmatic name, I would guess.
There's a lot of layers to that, anywhere from, like, just try to be patient to what this is all about is building the base of a more sustainable lifestyle, a more sustainable community. And
I mean, you're not just throwing the seeds in the ground and hoping they come up?
And it's not just about our farm. It's about our farm interconnected with other farms that are really trying to build this local food system. And through that local food system, working to build more sustainable relationships and interconnections in our communities.
Well, so Jan has a farm, One Step at a Time Gardens, and it's a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and she also is North Iowa Fresh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is part of this whole long journey. So our farm started in 1996. So we were probably one of the one of the early CSA farms in the state. And I also have this really where my bent is about education. So for the farm, it's a really powerful venue for education and organizational development. But just the farm alone is really not. In North Central Iowa, which was when we started, the vocabulary around local food was pretty limited.
Absolutely.
So education was a big piece for us, but it couldn't just be us. If we really wanted to change the system, we needed to get other people involved. So I worked at that through various little projects here, and that didn't go far enough. And then I worked at it through another project over here, and that didn't really get quite where we wanted.
You do things like, well, first of all, you're both very involved in Practical Farmers of Iowa, right, which is a statewide network. Mm-hmm. You also always have interns on your farm. And right, some of those interns have grown up and gone on to get their PhDs in food systems and do a lot of, I don't know how you get these great people, but you do it.
Well, we did. We hosted interns on the farm. So we had an extra house on the farm. They lived there and worked with us. And we always laid out a plan so we were clear about what their goals were.
And you still do this, right?
No. And there's reasons why. But the last intern was in 2014. So we have not the last couple of years. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. And so as you do that over that many years, various things and demands on your time change. And so I think our window of time to host interns has sort of come and gone. But over that time,
sort of like the raising the children is done.
Well, it changes.
That's true.
Right. Our kids were an integral part of the farm, and now they are off doing other things. But we still, you know,
you're still raising them. I know.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so, we did have a wonderful cadre of interns, and some of them have gone on to be successful farmers. And, you know, sure, we had a little slice of that, but they have to take credit for who they are and what they sought out. They sought out our farm. They sought out other farms. Mm-hmm. And that's part of this whole network system. You know, PFI is a great model of that farmer to farmer, and so we're certainly a piece mm-hmm. of manifesting that and supporting them and helping them get connected. And learning from them, tons of learning
from
them.
So North Iowa Fresh is what? Distribution?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to back up just a minute because we didn't get to North Iowa Fresh until we got to Healthy Harvest of North Iowa.
Oh, okay.
So, in my efforts to try to bring some of this conversation to North Iowa, 2011, we had been sort of involved in the Leopold Center's Regional Food System Working Group.
Right.
And in 2011, found some money to do some strategic planning. Pulled some people together and said, okay, so there's some interest in some collective work around local food systems. What are we going to call this? And the group came up with this name of Healthy Harvest of North Iowa. That was in 2011. Now we're in 2017. So over those years, we've taken, you know, again, a little bit of step here, a little bit of step there. But in the last couple of years have really started to click some pieces in place. And one of the early efforts we had begun was helping producers think about their markets. Farmers markets were fairly active across North Iowa and fairly established. So we sort of felt they don't need us at this particular point. We need to start exploring this conversation about collaborating and serving markets.
And farmers markets are not enough.
Farmers markets are not enough. Mm-hmm. If we're serious, we want to think about how do we get food into grocery stores and restaurants.
And schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
big hurdles there, yeah.
Big hurdles. There's a big learning curve because it's a very different marketing mm-hmm. structure. So
not only do you have to grow the food, you have to sell the stuff.
Yeah. And when you start talking about coordinating and collaborating with other producers, who are a very independent-minded group? And that's a whole learning curve by itself. So we got a small grant, and we doubled a little bit in wholesale, and we dabbled a little bit on some online direct consumer stuff. And then somebody said, this is not nonprofit stuff. You're really trying to start a business. You know, what are you going to do if you earn some money? Were you going to put it in Healthy Harvest's coffers? And then it's going to get confusing. We need to start it, you know, either a co-op or an LLC. And mm-hmm. so our groups, they advocated LLC. And the rest of us are sitting around the table said, okay, you seem confident? Great, we'll go with that. We don't know anything about it, but we'll try it. So that's where North Iowa Fresh got started. And then we've gotten some grant support and have made some great strides. and along the way have built a partnership with an organization called One Vision, which is a nonprofit in Clear Lake that serves adults with disabilities. And they serve as our aggregation site because it's generating jobs for their clients.
Oh.
And we went from 6 producers, pretty small-scale producers, to about 13 producers, a couple of which have joined this year that are much bigger scale.
Now, this is all vegetable farmers, right?
This is vegetables and fruits.
Okay. And so tell us what an aggregation site
does.
Means.
It means, okay, so these producers get on Wednesdays and Thursdays, we are telling an online system what we're going to have available next week. And the broker takes that information. She pushes that out to the buyers and say, okay, where are you going to put in for orders?
The buyers being
grocery
produce?
Stores and restaurants.
Oh,
at this
okay.
point, yep, that's who we're
that
selling
are,
to.
And so they will have to come and pick it up?
No.
See how complicated. Not yeah. only do you have to have it in a box and clean.
Right, right.
And on schedule.
On schedule.
It has to get somewhere.
That's right, right. So the buyers pull that information back to the broker, and then she pushes those orders back to the producers. So we'll get a pick ticket on Monday and says that's what's been ordered. Get it to One Vision by Tuesday morning, anywhere between Tuesday
so,
morning and
so
noon.
So what's a typical pick? You've got squash. What else do you have?
Well, you know, it changes throughout the season, mm-hmm. right? So we're talking to you here in kind of early-ish October. So this week collectively from all of our growers, we've got some folks who are doing a lot with greens. We're doing a lot with potatoes and onions and winter squash and green peppers still. I think there were still some cucumbers coming in. One of our growers, as I just heard this week, is doing green beans in his high tunnel. So we're going to have
right.
some fresh green beans.
That's true. We got tunnels these days. That's
right.
fantastic.
Yeah. We have tomatoes and herbs. One of our producers is doing a lot with raspberries. One of our producers has been involved in the aronia berry production, and he's involved with another group that does a bunch of makes aronia berry juice. So he's been selling aronia berry concentrate through this. You know?
So, and this is all by the case because it's all
right.
wholesaling.
That's right.
Right.
It is. Right. And so most of it comes pretty like first stage cleaned at the farm. Some of the greens need to go through a sanitation process. So they
Are
do
you,
that.
You're cleaning at the aggregators?
They're doing some final cleaning at the aggregators.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they're doing the sanitation for us. The year before, the farmers had that responsibility on their farm, but we brought that back to the aggregation center.
So that means that the aggregation center, which is this vision,
One Vision. Uh-huh.
You've had to put in some washing facilities.
Well,
some...
you see, one of the reasons that it makes sense to work with them is that they have a certified kitchen, and it's a facility that they had been doing a lot of meals cooking out because they had all their clients were living on site. They have pushed their folks to live more integrated in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have a kitchen. And they're like, we need to figure out how to generate jobs for some of our clients. Look at what assets do we have. We have this kitchen. We have coolers. We have a delivery, a fleet of delivery vehicles.
Wow. Oh, because they're ferrying the clients around.
Right. They're trying to create, because of some changes in Medicaid, they're trying to change where they place and find employment for their
okay,
clients.
Okay, I have to say that this was a very lucky match because...
Oh, yeah.
Because
this is
to
huge.
Find a place to aggregate where yeah. you can have the already licensed sanitary facilities
right.
to have delivery vehicles, this is the nightmare for any startup of
right.
distribution.
Right, right.
Wow.
So that partnership is huge in terms
yeah.
of helping us to get as far as mm-hmm. we have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a wonderful match. When people actually cooperate, this sounds absolutely wonderful. I have a question about, probably before this really blossomed.
Right.
How do you convince a buyer to buy locally and take a chance on this new startup? How, by combining your farm efforts, you have quantity, but how do you convince a buyer, like a grocery store, that Yes, we can be there for you.
Well, I'm not the broker, okay. So I haven't had all those conversations, but we work very closely mm-hmm. with the broker, and that's Andrea Evelsizer, and she is based out of Clear Lake. I think, first of all, when you're trying to build any partnership and you're trying to figure out how you can work together, you've got to know the other person's missions and goals, all right? Hy-Vees were probably one of the first ones that we worked
yes,
with.
Yes, and that's another wonderful thing in the state of Iowa.
Right.
Each Hy-Vee does their own purchasing.
So it does vary from store to store, but there is this sort of overarching value around local.
Yes, and there is a willingness at the corporate level. Absolutely.
Right. So Hy-Vee has been on that leading edge, and we've had a really good relationship with the produce manager at the Hy-Vee West. And Mason City has two Hy-Vees, one West and one East. And then so we've been working with that. He had been buying from some individual producers so he could get a large quantity of potatoes or he could get a large quantity of tomatoes. But we came in and said, look, we can help diversify your selection and you only have one point of contact. You don't have, you know, so you have to understand their system a little bit to figure out how you're bringing in assets that are going to make their job easier. And we are riding also on the coattails of a national conversation about food. And
absolutely.
That's helped us all over the state.
The buy local. Buy local camp. I mean, I have to say about 10 years ago, I spent a lot of time talking to farmers as a chef, letting the farmers know what it was like to have a chef's life, what the requirements were, and why. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, hello, you can't just like drop off a bunch of muddy stuff at the back door and have them be thrilled with it.
Exactly. And so that's part of that. It's a whole different marketing sequence than if I was just going to the farmer's market. If I'm going to the farmer's market, hey, I take what I have ready. You know, I kind of know my clientele and I know what they like. But if I got rainy and I couldn't get a certain crop out of the field, so what? I just didn't have it to sell. Ah, when you're growing in here, we've done planning with our producer members through the winter so that we can say, hey, we know Donna, you're going to be bringing in green peppers. And Lana, you're going to be bringing in onions and herbs. And if something goes fooey, you know, we were relying on you. That's again, the advantage of having multiple growers is because we do have some backup. If somebody has something go on at their farm with their products, we do have another producer who's doing that kind of product also. So it's the broker's job is to sort of, you know, share the orders across the group and find and continue to work with those buyers and find out where is their growth opportunity in the market. For example, this spring, we realized a huge demand for greens, and we have an area that we really want to do some real growth in because we want to take advantage of that early part
Good.
Of the season.
Good, so you'll do more next year.
That is the plan. The other piece is that we just got a new grant and we'll be trying a CSA box program. So we're going to add a direct-to-consumer component to this group, and we're going to be approaching some work sites. And
yes.
In writing the grant, we'd already done a little sampling about this work site, that work site, this work site. So we already have a couple in mind.
What kind of grant funding is available for this?
These both have supported us are USDA, Local Food Promotion Program grants.
This is it's interesting because, well, we all know in Iowa that the Leopold Center started a lot of this about 10 years ago.
Yep.
And amongst other organizations nationally, and it has now reached the point, I know they're actually upping, I believe, the money available at the USDA for this sort of thing. That's in the latest proposals for the Farm Bill. You know, what they're saying in Washington, which we all know, is if you buy local food from local producers and farmers, then that money actually stays in the community as opposed to, say, going to a large multinational company and you buy your groceries there, then that money goes off to, like, Arkansas, for example, or something, instead of staying within state and creating more jobs. So this is it's making sense even to our current administration in Washington.
Well, and, you know, anybody who is participating in this whole system, this local food system, you know, take advantage of that message and talk to your legislators because this new farm bill is being discussed and we are talking about priorities.
Do call our senators and tell them, you know, support this local food buying initiative in Congress.
The grants that we've been able to get support from came out of the last farm bill. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're on kind of the tail end of that. Mm-hmm. And so as we look toward this new farm bill, the groundwork that's been laid in supporting local food systems has been significant under
this
previous
administration.
And this
is not just in Iowa. This is actually going on all over the country.
Giving farmers opportunities to diversify. Uh-huh. We've been working with several new conversations with some of the folks involved with Farm Bureau, and they're telling us, you know, the farmer that you think of as a typical Farm Bureau farmer with corn and beans is not the farmer that they're seeing in the future. They're seeing the future farmer to be a much more diversified and specialties and niches. It's like, well, that's great because there's where the opportunity, and that's, in my opinion, mm-hmm, that's where I mm-hmm. see the hope.
Well, with the commodity prices the way they are, it's a good thing we're thinking out of those boxes.
Right.
Now.
I mean, the vice president of North Iowa Fresh is a young man who is come back to be part of his family farm based in Wright County, which is corn and beans and hog confinement. And he's starting his own component with vegetables and an understanding that he needs to put that kind of diversity under his operation to help sort of weather the boom and the bust cycle that you get through this other kind of farming system and give him a little more stability in his farming income.
It's also become a model for beginning farmers because, land is very, very expensive here.
Right.
So if you're growing vegetable crops, you actually per acre can produce more income. So either if a beginning farmer wants to buy, 10 acres or something, that you can make not a fabulous living, but you can make a living off of it. Or farmers younger, second and third generation, when there's no more money to be made on the farm, how do they keep those kids,
How do they give them opportunities?
Right. So they give them 10 acres to grow carrots or something like that.
But the conversation turns the question around a little bit in this situation. You've got to know your market. You've got to anticipate where that is. And you've got to plant your product mix to meet that market, not just say, I'm going to plant rutabagas because I think there's something out there for it. I mean, I think that's what's happened a little bit with the aronia berry. We think it's a great crop. That's wonderful. It has wonderful attributes, but they didn't have a market to really take that volume behind
that. Who knew what aronia berries were 15 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Farming, as I understand it, farming really is planning for the future. You just can't.
Unknown future. Yeah. It's sort of like gambling, isn't it?
Right. Well, it is. No, you know what you're doing. But there is a time lag. There is a time, and planning is very important. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Thank you.
we're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Jan Libby.
I want to make sure as we talk about this kind of work that I've talked about what's going on in our farm and how we've pulled some people together across the North Central region and the work that we're doing there. And then we're also supported and inspired by the work that's going across the state. And hopefully we're offering some inspiration to some others as well. And that is the Regional Food System Working Group is an entity that's been meeting on a quarterly basis for quite a few years.
Right. And started at the Leopold Center.
Started with support
it's
from the Leopold Center.
It's now housed in Extension.
Mm-hmm. Supported by the ISU Local Foods team. And mm-hmm. it brings local food coordinators and partners together from across the state. So that's just to encourage anybody listening to this to think about how they can get connected and that maybe there's some stuff going on in their area that can find out about it.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that brings me to, since we have, I have these two lovely farming women here, Lana and Jen, who have been doing this for a while. My favorite vegetable, which I get I'm fortunate enough to get some of Jan's every year, squash, winter squash.
Isn't that wonderful? It's just getting into that time of year, sort of that seasonal food, a comfort food.
What's the variety? I call it kabocha. What do you guys call it? What's it say on the seed package?
Well, it says kabocha.
Oh, goody. Because squash have so many different names. But this one that I like is kind of green and bumpy. Sometimes they're orange, but right. The green ones seem to be the sweetest, most wonderful squash in the world. In fact, Halloween is coming up, then Thanksgiving, and then Christmas. I never use pumpkin. I use squash in all my pumpkin pies.
Same here.
Yeah, because it's just...
I think it's better. I think the flesh is creamier.
I think
a pumpkin is a little stringier, and I like a little creamier.
Right. Mm-hmm. The depth of flavor that you get from a kabocha squash. So I have a whole refrigerator in my basement reserved for my annual supply of kabocha squash. So,
well, and we brought you your supply down today, right? We're going to unload it at your house afterwards.
That's how I know. Okay, we're going into the fall.
What do you do with it all?
Well, what can't you do with squash? Of course, I make, on our plug our website where we have the recipes, right? Where is it?
You mentioned making pumpkin pie or making pie out of squash.
Right.
Well, I have a great pumpkin pie and or squash pie recipe. If you go to khoifm.org, that is the community radio station website. But you can look for the Donna Lana Kitchen page there. You can find out more than you ever want to know about us. But we have a recipe page. And one of the first recipes we put up when we got started, it's a recipe for Provençal pumpkin pie. You don't have to necessarily think of your pumpkin pie, or if you want to make it with squash, that's fine too. You don't necessarily have to think of the same old Thanksgiving fall spices. This one is a French recipe, and it takes squash as a pie with cream and all kinds of good things. But the main flavor is orange and Grand Marnier. What could be not to
like and
about
you can
that?
Put that. That goes with these kinds of squashes. And also on that is my pumpkin cobbler recipe, which I always use kabocha squash for. And Jan, what is your favorite recipe?
Well, so yes, if it's not there, maybe we could get it added. Yes. This is a cheddar apple squash.
Gratin.
And you take onions and you saute them with thyme, and you take the apples and you toss them with a little bit of flour, and you take some cheese and you grate that and throw in some breadcrumbs, and then you've got your cooked squash, and you just layer that stuff up, and it's wonderful.
Oh, yum.
So that sounds like another addition that you will probably find soon, as soon as I can wrangle our webmaster to get that. And we can talk about Jan's recipe for cheddar apple squash gratin, along with Donna's recipe for cobbler, along with mine for my French pumpkin pie, and that's at khoifm.org.
There's a few other things that are really simple. This is the most simple. I'm going to do this for a Sierra Club dinner in a couple of weeks, actually. I just take the squash and cut it into pieces that are maybe 4 inches by 4 inches, and then I rub them all with rub them with olive oil, and then I put a mix of salt, pepper, and ground coriander on it. Pat it, good coating of spices on it, and stick them in the oven.
That's it.
And roast them. That's it.
Sometimes, you know, a real good product, that's all it needs.
That's really good. Or, of course, there's squash soups. Many, many kinds of squash soups.
Sure.
And that lends itself to, again, not the usual, oh, squash, it must be fall. We have to get out the cinnamon and the nutmeg. Well, you can go curry. You can go do all kinds of nice things.
Yeah, you can blend them with coconut milk and put curry in it and go really Asian, a little fish sauce and some sriracha maybe or, you know, a little heat. Really, really good. Or sometimes I just buy, you know, an aseptic carton of mushroom broth and mix it with the cooked squash in a blender, chop a little fresh herb in it. I mean, it's so simple and so good.
So I have to throw out two more. One is a squash. I think it's a squash dip with apples. I can't remember that squash. It's really good, but it's instead of like a caramel thing, it's this squash dip. It's really good. And then another one for finishing off your meal, and do it with a lot of people because this is super rich. You're never going to want a big slice, but it's a chocolate squash cheesecake, something like that.
Whoa!
Very rich, very powerful. Yeah.
Well, I've made pumpkin cheesecakes and I've made chocolate. So together,
just blend them together.
Why not?
And you swirl them, and it's beautiful.
Oh wow! Now that sounds like a Thanksgiving treat too.
Yeah. Right.
Oh boy.
Well, I'm hungry already. Now we talked about kabocha squash. That's one kind. There are lots of different kinds. Do you raise any other kind of squash?
We do. I can't even remember how many, but we've got butternut and buttercup and delicata and spaghetti squash and the red kabochas and the green kabochas. There might be a few others in there that I can't remember. Well, acorn, of course.
Acorn. Yeah. They really do have different sort of taste and different
textures.
Yeah, some of them are sweeter, some of them are richer, some of them are.
You get to be a bit of a squash snob. And at the farmer's markets. We used to sell farmer's market too, and I was always trying to get people to stretch beyond acorn.
Yeah.
Acorn
and the butternut too.
Yeah, acorn is fine, but there's more out there. And so that was the fun thing, to be at the farmer's market, and sort of year after year people will come back and say, but I want to try that other one that you had last year. And it's like, yes, we're making a difference.
It's nice to broaden people's horizons. I don't grow a lot of squash on my farm. But this was a good year because heaven knows why. But somehow I grew squash on some paper mulch. And it just happened to, I don't know why.
Liked it, huh?
Everybody was happy. And two that I tried that I absolutely loved. Sweet Mama, this little thing. And it's very dry.
Is it like acornish?
No.
It's like a sweet dumpling?
It's like a sweet dumpling.
Oh.
Yeah, and very, very firm flesh.
You've been holding out on me, Lana. I want to try one.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, I didn't know I was going to get any of these. I just harvested them this week. And another one that I have grown before, and I know I got these seeds from Seed Savers Exchange. I buy things because the pictures look pretty. Okay.
She's our visual artist.
That's right.
Yes.
This one is a white acorn.
Okay.
And I don't normally like acorn. It's okay. This white acorn, it comes on a little later than the rest of the acorns. And there it is. It's white. You think it's going to turn, but no, it's white. Actually, it is at its prime when it goes from the stark white to it gets a little golden, and boy, are they good. So the white acorn, and I suppose it has a name besides white acorn. But
yeah, and Lana's going to use them in some kind of decorative.
I see a variety this year called, and I see it at other stands, called Carnival.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's been around.
That's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, see, another one of those. It's pretty. So, but I recommend
that.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of close to that sweet dumpling, too. It seems to me it's kind of close to that.
Well, here's the other thing. You know, you can, they are storage.
That's the wonderful thing about this time of year.
Right.
I mean, early part of the year, right? You're like, you're working with the greens, and they just come and go so quickly, and now you've got stuff that hangs around for a while.
Yeah, you can use them for a table decoration for a while.
When you get sick of them, you eat them. Right.
Yeah.
It looks nice to put your lettuce out as a table decoration, but it just doesn't hold up very well.
No.
Donna, you mentioned storing your squash in a refrigerator. Other places?
How do you store it, Jan?
Just a cool, dry place. Now we are enjoying the fact that we haven't had a frost, so we're not too worried about that. But our squash gets harvested, put on our flat rack, and it hangs out in our shed. because we have such a great volume. I mean, when we harvested over 4,000 pounds.
How do you keep the critters out of there?
Well, I don't know. They just behave themselves. They must find something else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you have to watch out. It's sweet. They like it. It tells you something.
Yeah, but it is one of the things that is more easy to store than almost anything.
Right, right.
I want to back up as a grower of things. Squash, I find very iffy to grow because there are certain bugs that like it.
Mm.
So do you have any wonderful suggestions, or do you just kind of give up? There is two things for me. The squash vine borer, nasty little thing, or the squash bugs, the gray things that just kind of grow. So any words of wisdom?
Boy, I think for whatever reason, we have not been plagued by the squash vine borer. That doesn't seem to have been a real big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
knock
on wood. Don't say it too loudly up there. Cucumber beetles can be a problem. And we have some varieties that seem to be much more vulnerable to that in the springtime, that they really get hit. I think the buttercups in particular, they usually are kind of hard to get starting. Mm. And then it's a little later toward the end of the season when we start to see the squash bugs. They don't bother too much. Historically, we had enough area under production that we would have plantings in two different locations. And if we had pressure in one area, we generally did not in the other. What I get a kick out of is all the pollinators. And we've tried to create quite a diverse plantings on the farm to try to give some support to those pollinators. So watching those squash bees deep in the blossoms was, you know, it's just a kick. Yeah, and it was amazing. Now, this happened to be a little situation when I was harvesting zucchini at this particular time, but there was a squash bee down so intently in the center of that flower that I could, that as I tried to get a little picture of it, I could notice that its tongue was wrapped around the stamens down in the bottom of the flower. And I've never really paid that close of attention. And I got the picture and I put it in our little weekly note that we put out to our farm members. It's like, who knew about bee tongues?
Oh.
Not this person. Yeah, just learned it this summer.
And we all depend on that. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't get the squash pollinated.
That's
we don't
have to do. It's a good thing they're doing it for you.
Yes.
So this has been Jan Libby, who is featured in a new book called Women on the Land, which was written by Barbara Hall, and Catherine Gamble is the photographer. From Ice Cube Press, you can buy the book because it's a beautiful, beautiful book full of all generations of Iowa farmers who are women. And
if I can just interject, it's just a great cross-section of the creativity and the ingenuity of women farmers across Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know about the kind of stuff that's going on, not only is it a beautiful book on your table, but it's just a great stepping inside the character of Iowa.
That's Ice Cube Press, Women and the Land.
You're listening to KHOY. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. And as we talked about the recipe page there a little bit, if you would like to find out more about not only this fine program, but more about this fine radio station, which is a community radio station, unlike most other ones you're hearing, go to khoifm.org. You can find pictures and stories and pages of lots of locally produced programs, lots of nationally produced programs, and they are just something to tickle your ears. You go ahead and do that.
And it's all about us. It's our community. Yeah. What's going on here in Central Iowa? What's really relevant and quite available?
And
we're a busy bunch of folks.
Right. Don and I enjoy doing this, and like we always say, if you don't like what's on the radio, come on into your community radio station and make your own darn show. We're here in Down the Line of Kitchen. We're talking to Jan Libby. She is involved in some wonderful food projects up in north central Iowa. Tell us about some wonderful things that are happening, Jan.
So I told you about the aggregation partnership between One Vision and North Iowa Fresh.
Tell us what One Vision is again.
One Vision is a nonprofit in Clear Lake that serves adults with disabilities, and they are in this mode of trying to generate new enterprises and food
and
production.
And work for their clients.
And work for their clients. And so they've really started to develop a number of enterprises. They have ground on their campus area where they're doing the production. They're also working as an aggregation center for North Iowa Fresh. And then another piece they started this summer was opening a restaurant called Fieldhouse in Clear Lake as
a place. That's ambitious.
It's very ambitious because we all know that restaurants, as exciting as they are, it's a dicey business.
Yeah.
Well, that's created great new demand for these local food products. And then that individual who helped to start that as a chef has a cousin in the town of Fertile who opened another little restaurant called Cafe Mir. And then we've just become aware of a number of other chefs who are really taking a stronger position in working with local producers. So in Osage, mm-hmm. there's a restaurant called Taste. And we have another Calliope Catering in Kensett. And Andrea Berger has been helping to be involved in some of these farm-to-fork dinners and doing some farmers market demonstrations. So all you talk about the whole food system, and you need producers, and you need buyers, and you need consumers, and chefs and restaurants.
The eaters.
Right. Chefs and restaurants bring us connections in a new level. And so it sort of takes the whole conversation is continuing to grow. So it's exciting.
Oh, thank you for sharing this good news. Good news about food. Thank you for being with us today, Jan.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share what's going on and share what excitement is happening in North Central Iowa.
It was fun talking to Jan Libby. And we've got some upcoming things happening here. Donna, what's going on this week?
Well, we're going to get a little cheesy here. There's a cheese fest this week from Connie, our fabulous cheese buyer at Wheatsfield. And Connie knows her cheese. She used to have her own Northern Prairie Chev cheese company. So she used to be a maker and a farmer, and now she's the main purveyor at Wheatsfield. So there are demos every day, including today. And then, of course, Saturday, she'll be featuring local cheeses. So we want to all get in there and taste. We have some really fine cheeses here in Iowa. There's, of course, the Prairie Breeze, which we all love. And then Lost Lake. Kevin Dietzel's cheeses.
Lost Lake Farms.
All right. So that is that actual farmsteaded cheese where he has the cows, he has the pasture, he milks the cows himself, he makes the cheese himself. And I think the nutritional quality of that is so good. I like to buy even the flavored curds to feed to my grandson, make sure he gets all those gamma-linoleic acids and it's all pesticide-free and herbicide-free. And so get in there and have a taste of the local cheeses. That's this Saturday at Wheatsfield. And also on Saturday, they'll be having some little price reductions. Plus, there's a cooking class Thursday at Wheatsfield called Let's Fall for Cheese. So that's Becky Ringsby is teaching three different kinds of things with cheese. So it's a cheesy week.
I like cheese.
We all
love
cheese.
I do. And Don and I, we are fond of cows and everything that cows do.
Anything dairy. I always say I've been a dairy milkmaid many lifetimes.
Oh, yes, yes. We enjoy cheese. And, yeah, it's now's the season for cheese plates and put some cheese on things.
Yeah, that's always the easy entertaining.
Well, we talked earlier about that wonderful book that featured Jan Libby and a lot of other women farmers in Iowa. Yes. And I ran across another book. Now, this is silly, but with the Halloween season coming up and sort of the dark side
of
life.
Spooky days, yeah.
Well, I picked up a book in the library, that's the Ames Public Library, called The Mystery Writers of America Cookbook. Edited by Kate White. Now, the recipes were surprisingly good. You know, a lot of mystery writers like to feature food.
Right. Who poisoned who? Hit who over the head with the frying pan? And there's all kinds of things that happen in the kitchen.
You know, lethal fruitcakes.
Unsavory things.
But there's lots. I enjoy mysteries. And there's a classic, and I just want to mention this as a classic, and it's mentioned in the introduction of this book called The Mystery Writers of America Cookbook. And there's a book written by Roald Dahl. It was written in 1953, and actually I've heard this story referred to in other mystery stories because it's kind of classic.
All-time favorite, yep.
It is called The Lamb to the Slaughter. It's a great plot here. Okay, there's a housewife named Mary Malone, and she, believe it or not, has killed her husband, and the policeman cannot figure out.
I wonder why.
I didn't get into this. This is a synopsis here. But she kills her husband, and then the policeman cannot figure out how it was done. Isn't that the perfect mystery story?
She's a very clever housewife here.
So what Mary did, she confronted her husband, who evidently wronged her in many ways. She grabbed a frozen leg of lamb and bashed her husband over the head, killing him instantly. But what now, she wonders. She sure doesn't want to go to the gallows for her crime. So Mary sticks the leg of lamb in the oven and goes out the back door to go food shopping, and then returns and says, oh, my goodness, someone has killed my husband.
Done in my husband.
Called in the policeman, and it was determined that he was killed by a heavy, blunt instrument, but there's no sign of it anywhere in the apartment. The leg of lamb is roasted. Mary takes it from the oven and offers slices to the multiple detectives who are there, and they devour it. To them, she's above suspicion, and they remain stumped by the crime scene. If only, they say, there were a murder weapon. Well, I'll let you figure out if she ever gets caught, but people discuss this thing over and over and over again because, wait a minute, she puts a frozen leg of lamb in the oven and it turns out edible just because she ran off to do grocery shopping. I think this is a little strange. Wouldn't it be a little tough? I don't know.
No, you could grocery shop for hours and hours, and it would come out just fine.
Oh, you're kidding.
Why not?
I thought, well, okay. All right.
We could do that. It's very credible storyline.
Oh, all right.
You know, the other story that's very similar to that is, do you remember it was a movie, Fried Green Tomatoes,
oh, yes,
and the Whistle Stop Cafe, and the body disappears, and it turns out it's in the barbecue being fed to the local policeman. And it's worth watching again. I love that. And Norman Lear, my dear old client, was the executive producer on that. And it is a hoot.
It is a hoot.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Good. Well, this leg of lamb thing, like I said, I've heard that referred to in other books that I've read, and you always like to improve your mind, and I'll kind of keep that in my brain in case I ever want to off somebody with a leg of lamb. I guess it could be done. Yes, it could. That was the book is called Lamb to the Slaughter by Roald Dahl, and was written in 1953. It's been around for a while. Well, I think we're officially into fall, Donna. You're talking squash, and I'm harvesting squash. You're putting up squash, and
the time to bring all the rose geraniums in from the garden, and the lemon verbenas, and what else do you have to carry into the house to overwinter?
Well, I've got a few things that I wouldn't have to, but I do. I've dug up a few herbs, put them in pots, because I
do. Do I have to bring my sage in around here?
I do. I've had it work about half and half.
Okay.
Some years it's really cold and I can't get it to come back again. Other years I do put lots of leaves around them.
Okay, so
yeah,
you have to mulch it up a lot. And then rosemary?
Again, I've had it work half and half.
Okay.
So I dig some up, bring them in, and heavily, heavily mulch the rest, although actually I have luck breaking off little bits and rerooting everything. It's kind of nice.
Oh, Lana has this green thumb that's goes all the way up to her elbow.
And also it's a little less... When you start bringing those big pots in, you run out of room. And you
I know. I don't have that many south-facing windows. What are we going
to
do?
It's hard to do.
Okay.
But I'm doing that with rosemary. I'm starting little rosemary starts. I do have one pot I'm bringing in, and I will try to keep it cool. It does like to be cool, but not super cool.
All right. Well, we're ready for this fall stuff. Here we go.
Here we go.
Got the wood piled up for the stove.
Oh, wood in the stove, yes. It's going to be time soon. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we talked to Jan Libby, who started her farm called One Step at a Time Gardens, and it just grew into the really nicest collection of people championing local food in North Central Iowa.
And she brings us squash. And don't forget, what else is for the fall? Chestnuts!
Chestnuts
roasting on an open fire.
Good.
Here we go. We're ready.
Are we in the mood now or what?
Huh. Bring it on.
You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Thanks for joining us today. We had music today from a collection of contra dance music from the Northwest. It's called the Portland Selection. The musicians are George Pick, Clyde Curry, and Susan Songer. So go ahead and dance around your kitchen table. You can listen to us here on KHOY Community Radio, Tuesdays at noon, repeated at 7 p.m. or anytime at khoyfm.org. This is the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtel.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.